How nice to see you all. Okay, this morning, I thought I would talk about how we can practice with all of the violence, the difficulties, the conflict, confusion, fear, all of these kinds of emotions that I think all of us have felt at one time or other these last few months, this last year. So I wanted to talk about that. What I ended up with is kind of a laundry list in the sense that I think there are several practices that we can do. So as I go through this, maybe think about something that might apply to you, something that would work for you. I was also thinking that I could make my notes available if people wanted them, send them to you as an email or something like that, so that you could actually look at these various practices. Maybe when you were having a difficult time, you could say, well, you know, what here might be helpful at this point with what I'm feeling. Okay, so the first thing that we can do is to use kind of a loose word, a Christian word, is to pray. That's one thing that we can do in our practice. So what is prayer in Buddhism? There's loving kindness meditation. So that would be where you just sat down and you said, may all beings be happy. May they be free from suffering. May they be free from the root of suffering. So this is called metta practice. So if you're feeling some particular animosity towards someone, maybe you might say that. May they be happy. Because this is transformative. It helps us to cultivate an open heart towards the situation. May I be happy. That's a good one too. Because when we're happy, we're going to be more generous. We're going to be calmer. We're more able to deal with whatever's arising. So loving kindness is a way. Silent meditation. That would be our school. Just to sit down, shikantaza, to be just be with whatever is happening at that moment. A willingness to just sit in the midst of whatever's going on in our mind. Chanting. You can chant. You can chant the Heart Sutra. You can chant the Metta Sutta. You can chant the sutra that we do in the morning, whose name is Verse of the Universal Gateway. So there's lots of Buddhist chanting that you can do. Just sit down at home. Get out your chant book. Chant. Chanting. Chanting has you can chant in Japanese or in English. Chanting has a soothing effect on us. It's like music. Listen to music. It's a kind of music that you can listen to. You could probably go online and find this wonderful chant that the Dalai Lama does and just listen to that. It's very, very good. Loving kindness chant. Light incense. So these are all devotional practices. Light incense. Have an altar. Say, I wake up this morning, I'm fearful. I'm worried. I just watched CNN. I couldn't believe what I just saw. Light a stick of incense. Say, may all beings be happy. I light the stick of incense for the wisdom of everyone in the world. May we all find wisdom, including myself and others. Light a stick of incense. Believing in the power of these activities, having confidence, having faith in the power of these activities. And all of this is about remembering our bodhisattva vow. So what is our deepest wish? Suzuki Roshi said, inmost request. We come to practice we come to practice essentially, most of us, because we want to alleviate our suffering. The bodhisattva vow is about alleviating our own suffering and the suffering of all beings. So this way in which we make this vow. So the bodhisattva vow formally is to save all beings. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. But you don't have to do that vow. You can make up your own vow. A vow that's very close to you. A vow that is about where you are at that moment. A vow that's about what you feel like you need to work on. What you need to cultivate. Jack Kornfield made this vow online. He said, "As we move through this beautiful and troubled world, may we vow to be a beacon of peace, a fearless carrier of respect and loving kindness for all life, a teller of truth, a voice for justice, a protector of those who are vulnerable or targeted. May the power of wisdom, integrity, and compassion be our guide." So there's an example of Jack Kornfield's vow that he made. So that's kind of formal. It's a very eloquent vow. But we can just say, may I find peace? May I be able to discern the situation? May I be present for this life? May I have kind speech? So whatever we think we need to do is then remember these vows. Remember our practice. Remember that practice is filled with tools of how we can respond. This is why we practice, right? This is the realized action of a Buddha. So this devotional practice, doing devotional practices, pause, stop, take a breath, breathe. Don't inflame your mind with fear. So we have this tendency when things are scary to us, and this is what this is about. It's about fear. It's fearful to think that we may be the next target of a terrorist attack. It's fearful to think that we might go down to Pacific Avenue and somebody's running around with a machine gun. It's fearful to think about our election process and what might be happening politically in this country. So this fear arises in us. And sometimes we don't even recognize that it's fear. We get really critical. We get really angry. We get sad. We get depressed. Whatever those emotions are, usually they're based on fear. We feel this kind of fear that we're afraid that we're going to be overwhelmed by something. We're afraid that we can't do something about something. So when we're feeling that way, try to stop, try to pause, try to take a breath. Don't inflame your mind. Don't inflame the mind of others. So when you feel fearful or angry or these emotions, take a break. Stretch. Stretch. Take a walk. Go to the movies. See a nice movie. Read some poetry. So do something that helps alleviate your suffering. Don't pile more onto it. Feel your grief. You know? Sometimes when we're doing practice, we think, oh, I shouldn't feel bad. I shouldn't feel this way. I should be happy. These stories we tell ourselves about how we should be. And then what happens is that we're not willing to be where we actually are. We're not willing to actually just be with the emotions that we have. Just be able to say, yeah, I'm really angry. Yeah, I'm really frightened. Wow, this is like, I just feel this deep sense of loss. I feel grief. So this way that we can identify the emotions that we're having, part of that is this stopping, this willingness to just stop and be with whatever is arising for us. That's okay. We don't have to do anything. Matter of fact, I think it's better not to do anything during this time. Just at this time of discernment, just stop and see where you are. Just stop and acknowledge how it is that you're feeling about something. And then what goes along with that is acceptance. And when I say acceptance here, I'm not saying accept things and don't do anything. I'm just saying that when we feel these emotions, when we're having these difficult times, just accept the fact that this is how the situation is. That this is the situation we're in. You cannot discern, have discerning wisdom about action unless you're willing to actually see what it is that's going on. So, for example, when people are engaging in violent actions, they're engaging in actions that stem from fear. They're engaging in actions that stem from trying to control something. They're engaging in, and that this is a situation. This is what's actually happening. So that we accept that and see that. And then I think we have a much better idea about how we can go forward with equanimity, how we can go forward with compassion, how we can discern what needs to happen and be skillful. Another thing we could do is just actively cultivate compassion and love. So on Friday night, on the 12th, so not tonight, but not next Friday, we're going to watch this movie on Please Come. Watch a movie on forgiveness and compassion. So it's a movie about one of the scenarios in the movie is about the the Amish folks whose children were killed and their forgiveness and why they did that. So it's that kind of people who have had things happen to them and why they've responded with forgiveness and talking about that. So that's in the movies at 7. So just a little plug for the movie. The Buddha said, hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases by love. This is the eternal law. So hatred does not cease by hatred. Fear is not alleviated by fear. Violence is not alleviated by violence. So, you know, we can listen to that and say, well, yeah, I know that. But if our response to ourselves is a kind of inflammatory speech, fanning of the flames of our fear or anger, that's cultivating hatred from this perspective. Maybe that's strong language, but this way in which we really look at what we're doing and saying, am I doing some version of this same thing that's distressing me so much? And to look at that. When we talk to someone who has a different view than we do, if we meet them with criticism, if we meet them with judgmental mind, then they're probably not going to want to have a dialogue. I don't know about you, but when people come at me in a really negative way, my tendency is to be defensive. So my practice is to meet that with an open mind. My practice is to say, to discern what this person's saying, to see their suffering, and to respond with a gentle, compassionate mind. That's the practice of that. That's what we want to do in our practice. So to cultivate that kind of mind when we're responding to this, and to cultivate that kind of mind for ourselves as well when we see this. So having also another point is having a faith and confidence in the teaching. So thought about some of the kind of basic teachings that we have. One of them is we have faith in Buddha nature. So what is Buddha nature? Buddha nature is that essentially we all share these same qualities. No inherently existing self, which is to say that we are in an interconnected relationship with all being. that nirvana, the realization of this, the enactment of this, is in this life, not in another life. So what that says to me is nirvana is actually a state of mind. Nirvana is a way in which we, how do we negotiate the world? How do we cultivate this mind of equanimity and compassion, this mind of joy, in the midst of all this craziness? So this possibility is there. And also impermanence, which is basically the same thing of talking about no self from a different perspective. That everything is interpenetrating, interconnected. Everything is making the world. In Buddha nature, the whole world, we've talked about this before, in Buddha nature, the whole world is engaged in this activity of making the world. So if you think about the world that way, everyone is contributing in some way. We may not know what that is. We may not know how that's coming forth. So this Buddha nature is this, in some ways, altruistic event. An altruistic event of the whole world supporting us and we supporting the whole world. This is this making the world. So that can feel like a real leap when things are happening that are so distressing. This is a real leap of faith to say, you know, the terrorism that happened in Paris is part of Buddha nature. And yet our Buddhist teaching says don't reject that. That doesn't stand outside of this Buddha nature. It is part of Buddha nature. Buddha nature includes all of these things that we want to exclude from what we consider to be this altruistic life. So how do we understand that? I think that's a koan, right? That's a koan. How do we respond to that? There are various teachings about this. One of them in the Vimalakirti Sutra, which I've talked about before, which is that these very things enable us to work on our practice, enable us to respond as Buddhas, enable us to find this faith in this practice. I'm not so sure I go along with that. You know? But I do have faith in that because I can see on a just process level that the whole world is necessary for the whole world. Right? You can see that just on a process level about what we know about science, we know that trees make oxygen, right? And we breathe, this is very simplistic, but we breathe oxygen. And that is what enables us to live, and then we exhale carbon dioxide, and that supports other life. So we can see in that there's this cycle that's going on. We know about rain and how the cycle of rain and water and all those things that happen. So we can see just on that level, and this is a level that we can talk about this, that is Buddha nature. That is the continuous practice of all beings making the world. So how do we extend this koan to include the totality of our existence? Because it must include the totality of our existence. So to take that up as a koan. Because when we take that up as a koan, I think it keeps us, our heart open. It keeps our mind open. So that we say, I'm not going to just reject this part. I'm not going to say, I can't, this part isn't part of this. Because this part has to be part of this. We're talking about all of reality. We're not talking about just the parts of reality that we like. So our bodhisattva practice, we say in Buddhism, we say in the mud and water. The lotus in muddy water. We have this beautiful flower that represents enlightenment, equanimity, serenity. And where does that flower grow? What sustains the flower? Well, it's in muddy water. Lotuses grow in ponds, in the mud, in the water. So we say bodhisattva practice is in the mud and water. Each one of us contributing to this world in the bodhisattva way. And when I say bodhisattva practice, I don't mean just Buddhists, but anybody. No matter what your faith is, your religion, this altruistic notion, this willingness to see the virtue of all things, this willingness to value each thing, and to know that we have to work at that, that we have to work at this thing, that our bodhisattva practice is to have faith. Our bodhisattva practice is to be willing to engage in these activities that strengthen this mind of ours, so that we can be a beacon in the midst of trouble and not be deflated. Or when we are deflated, we can inflate back up again. You know, that we can keep coming back. So this is our bodhisattva practice. It's hard. Bodhisattva practice is hard. Buddhist practice is hard. Any practice like this, not just Buddhism, any practice like this is difficult because it goes counter to what's easy. It's easy to just roll down the hill with our fear. It's easy to lash out. It's easy to do those things. But can we pick ourselves up and go forward? So one way that we do this is that we do it together. We support each other. One more thing about this is to say something about delusion. You know, what is delusion? So delusion, of course, the technical definition of delusion is something like we don't understand the true nature of reality, which is this interconnected, altruistic, compassionate event called life, right? That if we really understood that we are interconnected and interpenetrating, that we would respond to each other with kindness. We would support each other. So delusion is when we don't understand that. But if you look at delusion, all of us are afflicted with delusion. This is kind of the messiness of life, right? We are all affected by the things that have happened to us in our lives. We're all affected by the kinds of minds that we have. So it colors how we understand things. It colors how we see things. So maybe a person might be the kind of person that as soon as they feel like somebody is saying something about them that they don't like, they immediately have to lash out. They immediately have to counter that. So that's a kind of delusion. Or maybe somebody is someone who maybe skirts the edge of falsehood in a kind of defensiveness that comes from being pummeled over and over again about things. So that's a kind of delusion. So every one of us has delusion. Every one of us has something that we're unskillful at, or maybe more than one thing that we're unskillful at, that we work at. And these things come from delusion. And this is the nature of what it is to be in Buddhism. We say the Saha world. This is our world. This is our Buddha field. All of us are Buddhas. This is our Buddha field that we function in, the Saha world. And it's a messy place. And it's lotuses in muddy water. And this is Buddha nature. And we are all one. We are all continuously practicing, all of us, even the people we don't like, even the people we think are in total delusion, are engaged. This is our teaching. They are engaged in this practice too. They are part of continuous practice. They are Buddha nature. They are not separate from Buddha nature. In early Buddhism or in other schools, there's a group of people called Acantaka. Acantaka do not have Buddha nature. Somehow they have to go through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, and somehow they acquire this thing called Buddha nature. So they are outsiders. But in our school, we don't believe in that. We don't believe there's such a class of people called Achantikas. Achantikas are kind of like untouchables in a way, right? They're just completely like... But we don't believe that. We believe everyone is Buddha. We say all beings are Buddha. So, boy, how do we, you know, like, grapple with that? What's the koan in that? So, this segues into another part of this, which is cultivating unity. How do we cultivate unity? I would suggest one way is that we find people who share our values so that we can support each other and not support each other like them against us against them. Not, oh, my values are so wonderful and yours suck. Right? So I'm over here with all these wonderful people and you guys are off doing this horrible thing. Not like that. But this way in which we can say, oh, I feel depressed. Oh, I'm scared. Oh, I'm worried. And someone, we can say, well, but how do we, what are our practices? What do we do together? How do we, you know, cultivate loving kindness? How do we find unity with each other? How do we understand Buddha nature? How do we know what our practice is? So in that way, this is Sangha, right? This is Sangha, how we support each other in these activities. Dogen said in Bodhisattva Shishobo, which means the Bodhisattva's four methods of guidance, he said, talking about one of the methods of guidance is called cooperation. He said, cooperation means not being contrary. Not being contrary. So this way that we can synchronize with each other. He says, the task of cooperation means, for example, concrete behavior, a dignified attitude, and a real situation. So what we have here, folks, is a real situation. Right? This is our life. This is what's happening in our world. So how is it? So what I'm trying to talk about is how do we cultivate what he calls a dignified attitude. He has another fascicle that's called the Dignified Activity of a Buddha. So this is the Dignified Activity of a Buddha, cultivating equanimity, cultivating compassion, finding unity, using the resources that we have in our practice to allow us to do these things, to enable us to do these things. So this is this concrete behavior, a dignified attitude, a real situation. Concrete behavior in this case, I think about is what do we do? What do we do? So what we do can be cultivating the practice. It can also be doing something. So what do we do? I think one thing we do is that it has to be about right now. It has to be about, I talk about this a lot, I fall down on this practice a lot. So maybe that's why I talk about it a lot. What do you do at the grocery store? What do you do when you're driving your car? What do you do when we're talking to each other? What are we doing right here in our own life? So it's not somewhere else, but it's actually right here, which is like really hard sometimes to do that. So it can mean that. It can mean maybe if you're concerned about politics, then you go and you do something about that. You go and you talk to other people about using equanimity, using inclusivity, using right speech. Talk to other people about your beliefs. Do something. So there's this, you know, just in this daily life of doing your daily life, and then there's another layer out that's about other people and finding some particular activity or cause or something that you're engaged in. So this way that we go out from the center of ourselves, the center of this way in which we're trying to cultivate this bodhisattva vow. We're trying to find the dignified activity of a Buddha. And as we find that and cultivate that, it radiates out from our actions. It radiates out from our skillfulness. So we always want to go back and say, Is this skillful? Is this skillful? And inevitably, we fall down. And when we fall down, we use the practice to get back up. When we fall down, we say, I fell down. Now I'm going to get up and try to find what's the most skillful thing. Inevitably, we fall down with other people. And I don't mean in the sense of, I mean in relationship, we fall down. So how do we get back up? How do we dialogue with each other? How are we kind to each other? How do we use speech with each other? Dogen said about cooperation, the sea, the ocean, not refusing water is cooperation. So the image here is that all streams come down and make the ocean, right? And the ocean does not reject the streams, and the streams do not reject the ocean. Streams don't say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to go into the ocean now. And the ocean doesn't say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to accept you. Although, there is that place where the fresh water and the salt water come together, and sometimes maybe there's some turbulence there. You'll see like eddies or waves or whatever. But inevitably, that cooperation happens in the midst of that, that mixing together. And so Dogen says, the sea, not refusing water, is cooperation. Remember also that water has the virtue of not refusing the sea. For this reason, it is possible for water to come together. The sea, not refusing the sea, realizes the sea and realizes greatness. The sea, not refusing the sea, realizes the sea. We are not different from each other. So, everyone in this world and us is the sea, not refusing the sea. And one of the reasons, one of the ways that we can be the sea, not refusing the sea, is to see delusion, is to understand the nature of delusion, to understand that we are caught and others are caught, and to find our empathy and compassion. This does not mean that we don't do something, but what it does mean is that when we do something, we are more likely to do it skillfully than not. And when we do something that's skillful, the chances of it being efficacious are much greater than if we do something that's not skillful. Because when we do things that are not skillful, it tends to push away rather than create this situation. So Dogen says, the sea, not refusing the sea, realizes the sea, which is greatness. So what we are hoping for, what we are doing, is this dignified activity of a Buddha. It's the greatness of the sea, seeing the sea as the sea. He says, even if there is reward and punishment, there is no hatred. So here he's acknowledging that boundaries are set, right? Boundaries happen. No, this isn't okay. Yes, this is all right. This way that we can discern that something here needs to happen. But he says, in the midst of that, doing that, there is no hatred. Because when we do something from fear, when we do something from hatred, it's not going to be skillful. And so, again, this goes back to these steps earlier about cultivating these devotional practices, cultivating unity and thinking about unity, thinking about the nature of delusion, thinking about the nature of what it means to say Buddha nature, pausing, stopping, breathing, grieving, accepting where we are. So these are all things part of this process. And ultimately, what goes along with this is creating a generosity. This generosity of heart, generosity of mind, generosity for self and other. Oh, and the last one is resilience. Resilience. So this was interesting. I looked up resilience in the dictionary. So resilience is the capacity of a strained body to recover its size and shape after deformation causes, especially by compressive stress. Okay, so this capacity for a strained body, strained by compressive stress, to recover its size and shape after it's been deformed. This is our practice, right? This is our practice. As human beings, we get pressed and strained and compressed and deformed. We feel fear and anxiety and anger and jealousy and greed and right, all these things. And we go with practice. We breathe in our practice. Stretch out our limbs. And we decompress, and our body goes back to its shape. Our practice goes back to its shape. We remember our practice. We come back to this dignified activity of the Buddha. We fall down. We get up. There's a Japanese saying, falls down 7 times, gets up 8. And the Daruma dolls, right, they're... Remember those little bozo punch dolls when you were a kid? You know, they were weighted in the bottom and you... Bozo the Clown, you'd hit them and they'd... Well, Bodhidharma is like that, but you don't hit them. So the Daruma dolls are painted. They're Bodhidharma sitting zazen and they are weighted on the bottom. So you can never knock over a Daruma doll. You always like push it over and it comes back. So that's what we want. We want this resilience, right? This coming back, coming back, coming back. And the way we do it, again, is by all these things that I've been talking about. So, there we are. The laundry list of possible practices that you and I can do during this time of stress.